If you're listening to this, there's a good chance Queen Elizabeth II has been the Queen of England for your entire life. She's 92 and has been on the throne for 66 years. In 2015, she surpassed Queen Victoria, becoming the longest-serving British monarch in history.
Inevitably, a long life can pass by many milestones. My own is no exception.
On our recent visit to London, we stopped by Buckingham Palace to talk about the Queen with Victoria Murphy, former royal correspondent for the Daily Mirror and author of the book 60 Glorious Years. So as we look over Buckingham Palace, the first thing that we see is that the flag is up at full mast. What does that mean?
Well, the royal standard is flying at Buckingham Palace, which means that the Queen is in residence. It's the flag that flies when she is in residence in Buckingham Palace. We usually expect her to be in residence midweek at Buckingham Palace. It's her official residence. It's where she carries out things such as investitures. She holds audiences. She has offices there. It's where she does a lot of her work. It's where she spends her working week, effectively.
How much work does she do during the week?
Well, for a 92-year-old, a lot. She is still incredibly busy. Last year, she carried out almost 300 official engagements. She is slowing down a little bit, unsurprisingly.
She's passing on some duties to her son, Charles.
She is, exactly. We're seeing that at the moment. We're seeing this kind of gradual transition. For example, Charles has laid the wreath at the cenotaph to remember the war dead for the last 2 years running, and that is the nation's wreath that he is laying on behalf of the Queen, on behalf of the nation. She also no longer does any overseas travel, any long-haul travel, which is quite significant because, of course, she remains Queen in 15 Commonwealth realms outside of the UK, and she is unlikely ever to visit those countries again. But she is still busy. She still has audiences. She still receives her red boxes of government papers every single day. And she once said, "I have to be seen to be believed." And she clearly still holds that very true because she is out and about on engagements, meeting the public still regularly. She recognises that in order for the monarchy to stay relevant, in order for the monarchy to stay popular with the people, that it has to move and change with the times. So we have seen recently in the last few years the royal family really embracing social media. She has her own Facebook page. They regularly tweet. They have been very much embraced technology and allowed people to kind of get a little bit more of a glimpse, perhaps, through that of what is going on behind closed doors.
Do you think that she enjoys that, more of a glimpse? Because it seems over the years like she's tried to keep things the way that they were in many ways. She doesn't like showing a whole lot of emotion, for example.
I think that's very interesting. And I think what the royal family has to do is that they have to tread this line very carefully of being both relatable and ordinary, but also extraordinary. And part of that is maintaining some element of mystique. And the Queen has been very careful to do that over the years. Of course, as a constitutional monarch, she cannot get involved politically. She can advise and warn her ministers, but she should not be seen to be involved in political matters. And so she does need to not express an opinion. We shouldn't know her thoughts about political matters, and she has been very good at keeping anything to herself over the years. I mean, there was one period in her reign when she did allow a lot of insight. In 1969, there was a fly-on-the-wall documentary produced called The Royal Family, produced by the BBC, and they were allowed to film the royal family behind closed doors. And the film was produced and it was incredibly popular and it was incredibly eye-opening. It showed them having barbecues at Balmoral, having chats with each other. It showed them inside their palaces, having dinner, all of the things that they were saying to each other in private moments. Interestingly, I think we can conclude that actually they potentially saw that as a bit of a mistake because they have never done it since. And that documentary is now unavailable. Certain extracts of it are available,
really?
but it's not something that I think that they regarded as a good idea. I think the Queen probably believes that there does need to be an element of mystique, I think, surrounding them in their day-to-day lives.
One of the big moments that a lot of Americans remember, and a lot of people all over the world remember, is when Princess Diana died, and that the Queen was under a microscope in terms of how she reacted to that.
Since last Sunday's dreadful news, we have seen throughout Britain and around the world an overwhelming expression of sadness at Diana's death. We have all been trying in our different ways to cope. It is not easy to express a sense of loss since the initial shock.
What lessons do you think she learned from that experience?
I mean, the Queen has been incredibly popular throughout her whole reign, but there is one moment where it is generally concluded that she was a bit out of step with public opinion. And that is, of course, when Princess Diana died. She was at Balmoral with Prince William and Prince Harry, just lost their mother. She felt that it was her duty to protect them and to keep them out of the spotlight and keep them away from everything that was going on. But of course, it was a time of national grief. People were devastated and they wanted to see their queen. And, you know, headlines at the time, show us you care, where is our queen? People wanted to see her and to hear from her at that time. She remained resolute that she wanted to stay with her grandsons, but actually in the end that there was pressure there to change that stance and to come down to London and to make a speech, which she did. And again, I think that shows her ability to bend when she realises that it's necessary, and perhaps even though she felt she was making the right decision, actually the public felt something else, and so she came and did what they wanted her to do.
Are there people in the UK today who feel, why do we even have a monarchy?
There is a Republican movement in the UK. It's not a particularly strong movement with a lot of momentum behind it. There are people who feel that we should potentially have an elected head of state. However, polls do continually suggest that the monarchy remains very popular. Around two-thirds of people want us to have a monarchy. And I think actually a lot of that is to do with the Queen herself. I've covered the royals for several years, and one of the most common things I hear is that people might say, I don't necessarily have strong views about the monarchy, but I love the Queen. And I think those years of service that she has given to the country, I think people do really recognise and do really respect that she has put duty first, and she has continued to do that for so many years.
So, by the way, as we're talking, I'm just looking over at a kind of a parade that's coming by. What is that?
So we can see members of the Household Cavalry on horseback coming past Buckingham Palace there. They have got their red plumes coming out of their helmets, and they are travelling up the Mall.
Just your standard Thursday morning parade down the streets
right
in front of Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
So if people love the Queen but have sort of mixed feelings about the monarchy in general, isn't that a problem for the monarchy, because whoever succeeds her is going to have a tough time?
I think polls do suggest that there is strong support for the monarchy as well as just for the Queen in this country. However, I think that Republicans have probably correctly identified the fact that the end of her reign will be a time to spark renewed debate. There is a lot of allegiance to her personally for the years of service that she has put in. And of course, her successor will not have the opportunity to build up that relationship over a long period of time. Prince Charles will unlikely be king for anywhere near as long as his mother has. I think actually what we're seeing now is a real softening towards Prince Charles. Over the last 20 and 10 years, we have seen a public opinion warm towards him and Camilla as well. I mean, if you think back to 20 years ago, not long after Diana died, you know, they were really unpopular, and that's not the case now. And actually we've seen with the coverage of his 70th birthday recently that there has been quite a strong celebratory element to it, and quite a lot of positive noise around him, which does bode very well for the monarchists and for the continuity of the monarchy.
Is it a sure thing that he will be the next king, or could they skip him and go right to William?
It's definitely a sure thing. The system that we have in this country, a constitutional monarchy, means that the moment the Queen's reign ends, the moment she dies, he will automatically become king. There's no kind of taking a step back and having a conversation. He automatically becomes king at that moment. There has been discussion about whether or not he should abdicate in favour of Prince William. There's no indication that that will happen. There's also no indication that there's a real public strength of feeling for that to happen. I mean, we've seen with Brexit in the UK that the British public is capable of making dramatic change when there is a strength of feeling, but we're not getting any sense that that is the case about the monarchy. You know, we would have to see a real movement towards lobbying our politicians to make that change for that to be the case, and there's just no noise about that at the moment.
And just as Queen Elizabeth II is the longest serving monarch, he's the longest serving heir to the throne.
Exactly. I mean, it's quite remarkable really, because he's just turned 70 and he's still still has not got the job that he was born to do. And it's a time when a lot of other people are slowing down. And there is a recognition that that, of course, is unusual and potentially is challenging because he could have another 10 years to go. We just do not know. But yes, I mean, what's interesting actually about the system that we have here is that it's kind of, it means that we are, barring a very unexpected disaster or an abdication, we are destined to have a sort of elderly head of state, really, for the foreseeable future, because the royal family live for a long time. Gone are the days of unexpected illness, mm-hmm. and people dying in battle. And so, actually, we're looking at a situation where people won't hand over until they're maybe 100, and then the next head of state will be in their 70s. And that's what we're looking at now with our system for... well, as far as we can see.
That's Victoria Murphy, former royal correspondent for the Daily Mirror and author of the book 60 Glorious Years, speaking with me outside Buckingham Palace.